Welcome to the Naracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host, and with me as always is my co-host.
Hello, everyone. We have a packed show today, touching on some of the most debated topics in the developer community this week.
Today, we are digging into a massive controversy that really gets to the heart of how we build software in the generative era. What happens when you use an AI to build an app and it accidentally perfectly clones someone else's open source work, right down to the exact name?
We will also look at a new push to make Claude Code's memory system much more efficient. As projects scale, context bloat is becoming a real issue, and there's a new proposal to tie behavioral rules directly to specific tools and servers.
It's a great look at the friction points of modern AI development. But first, let's unpack the situation with Terry Goddier and the Dark Hours app. So this story blew up over the weekend when developer Terry Goddier published a blog post titled Mea Culpa. He had recently launched a new web utility called Dark Hours. The problem is there was already an existing open source astronomy application called Dark Hours, which lives at darkhours.app.
And it wasn't just a coincidence of naming. The functionality of Goddier's release was essentially a near-identical clone of that original open-source project. Goddier's defense in his Mea Culpa post is that he used Anthropic's Claude to generate the application, and he claims he had absolutely no idea the original project existed until its creator reached out to him directly on Blue Sky.
It is the classic, the AI did it defense, and it is becoming a fascinating flashpoint in the industry. On one hand, large language models are trained on massive amounts of GitHub data and public code bases. So if you prompt a model to build an astronomy app for tracking dark hours, it's highly likely to regurgitate the structure, the logic, and apparently even the branding of the most prominent open source example it ingested during training.
Right. The model doesn't know it's plagiarizing. It doesn't have a concept of intellectual property. It is just predicting the most statistically probable code for that specific prompt. But the reaction on Hacker News and across developer forums has been absolutely brutal. A lot of engineers are arguing that ignorance simply isn't an excuse here.
Exactly. The consensus seems to be that if you are shipping a product under your own name, you are entirely responsible for making sure you aren't infringing on someone else's work. You can't just outsource your professional due diligence to a chatbot. But the backlash is also being heavily fueled by some of Goddier's past history, which critics were very quick to pull up.
Yes, that backstory is really coloring how people view the sincerity of this apology. Previously, Goddier submitted an astrology app to Apple's App Store, which ended up getting rejected. But the allegation on Hacker News is that he then misrepresented the app to tech journalist John Gruber as a scientific astronomy app, seemingly to generate outrage over Apple's review process.
So you have this alleged prior deception involving an app rejection, and now you have an incident where an app is perfectly cloned, and the excuse is the AI hallucinated a perfect copy of an existing product. It makes the apology incredibly hard for the community to swallow.
To his credit, Goddier has now redirected his domain to the original darkhours.app project. He also stated in his post that he will no longer use AI to create web projects in this manner moving forward.
Which might be the right move for him personally to stop the bleeding, but it raises a much broader question for the indie developer scene. We are seeing this massive wave of developers using AI to rapidly prototype and ship products. The velocity is incredible, but this incident highlights the severe risks of flying blind.
It really does. If you don't fully understand the code you're shipping, or worse, if you don't even bother to run a basic Google search on the name of the app the AI suggested to you, you're setting yourself up for a reputational disaster. It is a fundamental failure of professional responsibility.
I think it also damages the perception of AI-assisted developers as a whole. There is already a growing stigma in some circles about AI slop or low-effort clones flooding the market and drowning out original work. When a high-profile mistake like this happens, it just reinforces the idea that AI tools are being used to bypass actual engineering, design, and research.
And it serves as a stark warning to anyone using these tools for commercial products. The models do not have a conscience, and they don't have a copyright filter built in that will stop you from deploying a copied UI. The liability rests entirely on the human pressing the deploy button.
I suspect we will see more of this before we see less of it. As the tools get better at generating complete, working applications from a single prompt, the temptation to just ship whatever it spits out without checking the underlying provenance is only going to grow.
That's exactly it. The skill of being a developer is shifting from just writing code to verifying and auditing code. If you skip the audit phase, you're playing Russian roulette with your professional reputation.
Speaking of developers using AI tools, let's pivot to the tooling itself. There is a really interesting feature request that just popped up in the Claude Code GitHub repository, issue number 85300, and it deals exactly with how these autonomous agents manage their context and memory. Right, so to set the stage here, Claude Code uses a directory called .claude/rules to store markdown files. These files act as modular, project-scoped memory. It's where developers put their instructions, coding conventions, and behavioral rules so that the agent maintains consistent standards across different sessions.
But there is a major catch with how these rules are currently loaded. Right now, they rely entirely on a conditional loading mechanism tied to file paths. The documentation explicitly states that these rules trigger when Claude reads files matching a specific pattern, not on every tool use.
And that works perfectly if you have a rule that says, whenever you edit a React component, use this specific formatting. The trigger is tied to the file path of the component. But as projects scale up, this path-based approach is creating a massive problem with context bloat.
Exactly. Developers are stuffing more and more instructions into these rule files, and because the loading is relatively blunt, you end up consuming a massive chunk of the model's limited token window with irrelevant instructions. If the agent is just running a database migration script, you do not need it to load the rules for front-end CSS styling.
Which brings us to the feature request. The author of issue 85300 is asking Anthropic to expand this conditional loading system. Instead of just relying on file paths, they want the ability to scope these rules directly to a specific tool name or a model context protocol server, an MCP server.
This would be a huge shift in how agentic workflows are managed. If you could tie a rule to an MCP server, you could make the memory loading incredibly surgical. The rules would only activate when the agent actually invokes that specific tool.
It is essentially asking for just-in-time context, and the performance implications are significant. By only loading the rules when the tool is called, you drastically reduce the context window consumption. That means cheaper API calls, faster inference times, and much less chance of the model getting confused by competing or irrelevant instructions.
I also find the security angle of this fascinating. In the discussion around the issue, people are pointing out that this could act as a kind of soft guardrail. If you have an MCP server that executes shell commands or interacts with a production database, you could attach a very strict set of behavioral rules that only load when that high-risk tool is accessed.
Right, you could have a rule that says, if you are using the database drop tool, you must ask for human confirmation twice. And that rule wouldn't pollute the context window during normal safe coding tasks. It would only appear the moment the agent reached for the dangerous tool.
It's a much more sophisticated way of handling agent autonomy. We have talked on previous episodes about the friction developers are facing with these tools, how it is hard to get them to follow complex, multi-step workflows without constant handholding. Better, more granular memory management is the key to solving that.
And it highlights a broader trend we are seeing across the ecosystem. The bottleneck right now isn't necessarily the raw intelligence of the frontier models. It is the scaffolding around them. How do you feed the model exactly what it needs to know, exactly when it needs to know it, without overwhelming it?
The issue notes that the author checked previous feature requests, and while there have been discussions about MCP server access and permissions, this is the first time someone has specifically asked for the rules and memory system's conditional loading keys to be tied to the tools themselves. It seems like such an obvious and necessary improvement in hindsight.
It really does. It will be very interesting to see if the Anthropic team picks this up quickly, because as Claude Code adoption grows, managing that context bloat is going to be critical for enterprise users who have massive code bases and dozens of custom MCP servers running simultaneously.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up today's briefing.
We have a couple more updates from the Claude ecosystem, plus some clever hardware and infrastructure hacks to get through.
First up, another Claude Code feature request, issue 85297, asking for the ability to connect Claude Cowork Dispatch to recent conversations. Right now, Cowork operates in a single thread of activity, which completely breaks context continuity for long-running projects.
Yeah, developers are currently forced to manually copy-paste summaries if they want an agent to pick up a multi-week architectural discussion. Allowing an asynchronous background task to explicitly attach to an older session would remove a massive amount of friction in complex workflows.
Staying with Claude Code, issue 85295 proposes a new two-column layout for the VS Code extension. The idea is to put the human conversation on the left and all the dense tool output, like file diffs and command logs, on the right. This directly addresses the context rot problem, where a short message from the assistant gets completely buried under hundreds of lines of automated terminal activity. Separating the prose from the execution logs seems like a simple but essential UI fix for agent fatigue. Moving over to hardware, a developer going by Seg6 published a great blog post titled, "My Server is a Phone Now," detailing how they migrated their personal infrastructure from a Hetzner VPS to a rooted Nothing CMF Phone 1.
It is a brilliant setup. They are using Termux to run Caddy and Cloudflare. You get 8 gigs of RAM, highly efficient ARM cores, and the phone's battery acts as a built-in UPS. They did have to stick with Android after post-market OS broke the Wi-Fi, but it is a great example of repurposing mobile hardware to dodge cloud hosting costs.
In privacy news, Fastmail has officially launched a dedicated data region in Amsterdam, allowing users to select the EU as the primary home for their data to simplify GDPR compliance.
It is a big step for data sovereignty, but there is a major caveat. While the primary data is in the Netherlands, Fastmail's resilient replicas, backups, and logs still remain in the U.S. for now. So if you are trying to completely avoid U.S. jurisdiction and the Cloud Act, this might not fully satisfy your requirements yet.
Finally, developer Andrew Taylor has created a fascinating tool for generating dithered QR codes. By dividing each QR pixel into a 3x3 grid, he uses the center for data and the surrounding area to embed low-resolution images using Floyd Steinberg dithering.
It looks incredible. It relies heavily on the QR format's built-in Reed-Solomon error correction to remain scannable despite the visual noise. It is definitely less robust than a standard black and white code, but it's a really cool way to turn a purely functional piece of digital infrastructure into visual art.
And that is going to do it for today's Naracast Tech Briefing.
As always, you can find links to all the stories, GitHub issues, and blog posts we discussed today in the show notes.
We will be back tomorrow with more updates from the bleeding edge of AI, hardware, and software development. Until then, thanks for listening.